Friday, October 18th, the Norris Group proudly presented its 6th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Property Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and Sean Watkins, Angel Bronsgeist and Sarah Benora, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Barry, MVT Productions, Rhoda Construction, Wilson Investment Properties, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
We're going to start our night with calling up Christopher Thornburg first. Dr. Thornburg is an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. He's been involved in a number of special studies measuring the impact of important events in the economy, including the NAFTA treaty, California power crisis, pool security, and September 11th terrorist attacks. All right. Glad you're with us. Have a seat right there. That would probably be anywhere to my right. Actually, Christopher's probably the first person I remember thinking, I can ask this man anything, and I don't have to know the answer. That was quite a relief. For the first time, we're joined by John Burns. John and his 40-person team advise executives on major residential real estate industry decisions all over the country. The company is on the retainer with many of the largest companies in real estate and investment industries, producing ongoing research and advice. I witnessed something that's very important to me. I watched an hour presentation that he had where he was a moderator, and he had several people on his panel. And what I witnessed, I've only seen rarely, and that was complete trust of the people he was asking questions of from their point of view. This man has a lot of credibility, and I'm glad he's here tonight because there's a piece of the puzzle I'm confused by, and John, I'm really glad that you're here. And it took... wherever you want to sit, fine. And if you think about where your business model came from, was mostly talking with builders, and then you have a completely different, or at least a growing set of clients. That was a good accomplishment.
If I was hanging out with home builders, I wouldn't have my business
today. No, you wouldn't. Yeah. That was a good thing to diversify. Christopher, I think I'm going to start with you and talk a little bit about what you see as 2014's GDP growth as far as the country. Because the reason I want to ask that is I want to back that into, are interest rates going to be radically different or very much the same?
There's two questions there, and they don't actually relate as well as you think they do.
Okay.
So we're going to have to relate two answers.
So I'm starting off on the right foot.
Right, yeah. Look, as for the economy, the fundamentals of our economy today have substantially improved. There's no doubt about it. Corporations make a lot of money. Labor market's starting to tighten up. Incomes are rising at a better pace. Obviously, real estate's starting to turn the corner. Banks are healthier, at least in terms of profits and losses and all that kind of stuff. The biggest problem we have, of course, are our, elected leaders in Washington, D.C., who seem desperate to upset the apple cart at some level. We just, of course, ran into this nonsense over the debt ceiling. It's not over. They extended it for 90 days. Some folks claim that they won't shut the government down again because Republicans took enough of a black eye that they won't try that gambit. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But even pushing aside the budget debates, we don't even have a full set of regulations about the banking industry. They can't even agree what a conventional mortgage looks like. And we live in this sort of period of policy uncertainty that's having an influence on things. Now, the fundamentals will keep us going, you know. But next year, 3% would be optimistic, I think. 2.5%, probably more realistic. But again, if we'd actually get somebody in D.C. who would get some of these things resolved, focus on things that are important as opposed to things that aren't, it could probably be a much better year than that.
Now, why do you think that doesn't relate to them saying, okay, we'll pull back on
right,
a Fed fund buying?
Yeah, you're talking about tapering, and the presumption here, of course, is that somehow or other quantitative easing has had this huge impact on long-term interest rates. Not really. It's kind of a psychological game. It's always been a psychological game. They were kind of pushed them to abnormally low levels, and when he even whispered tapering, they kind of bumped back up to what I would see as a realistic place for them to be. I mean, maybe they'll go up, 40 bips, but that's about it. Ultimately, we live in a world awash with capital. Our central bank is being loose. Other central banks are loose. We have, of course, large economies in Asia that are growing rapidly, and they have a lot of savings that they're trying to move out of their country. And ultimately, what that means is interest rates are going to remain low. I mean, some Chinese rating agency just downgraded U.S. government debt. At the same time, they announced that their treasury now holds the most amount of U.S. government bonds they ever have, $3 trillion. So, talking out of both sides of your mouth, right?
John, usually the builders have a bigger piece of GDP than they do right now.
Right.
So what do you see for 2014, first on a national basis, and then I want to kind of back into what's going on in California?
The builders have actually been pretty optimistic, as you pointed out back in June. The problem is they can't grow their business because there was $0 devoted to land development and land entitlement during the downturn, so they're trying to get some of that kick-started again, and it's taken them forever. And there really are two kinds of builders out there. There's the public home builders who've had insane access to cash. I kid you not, one of them raised $250 million at a 0.5% interest rate. Yeah.
Now, okay.
Yeah.
What's the
other one got it at 4.5% for 30 years.
And this is
so
bond?
These are bonds.
Okay.
Because the bond market is, with interest rates being so low, if you're running a bond fund, I mean, to get any kind of yield, these guys are desperate. So I think there's a huge appetite for mortgages, honestly, in today's environment. I don't know why he's buying any mortgages. But then there's the private builder world, who's trying to get loans from construction lenders, who want to see a lot of equity, and then they're trying to buy land, and some guy with a really low borrowing cost of 4% can buy all the land and develop it at a 4% interest rate. A private builder can't pay that price and just can't get it done.
Okay.
So it doesn't pencil for him.
Then why aren't the national builders really busy in California, or are they trying to be?
They're trying to be. Okay, honest to God, the complaint I hear number one is the shortage of land.
Well, that's not going to change, right?
Well, and there is a stigma associated with being in some of the sub-markets where they wrote off 90 to 100% of what they paid in the premium.
Right.
So there definitely is a stigma to going to Victorville and some of these other, and Hemet and other places. If you bring that deal back to corporate, I mean, it better look smoking good. And these guys have not been bringing those deals to corporate for that reason. But if it's in Ontario or Cucamonga or a good location, I mean, they're paying actually close to peak land prices now for some of finished lots in some of those good locations.
Would that pencil if you add construction costs?
No. Construction costs are way down. They're relying on a lot of home price appreciation, so they must be listening to you.
Okay, but no. It's like the time of day. It's, Okay, but there's a little bit of a ramp-up period when you decide, okay,
right,
we can build something. What is the ramp-up period? So you say, okay, now it'll pencil, but you haven't carved this hill up. What's the time?
Know, if you look at the 90s downturn, it was a 4 to 5 year ramp-up period. I mean, construction hit bottom, in 93? 94, 95, 96, there wasn't a heck of a lot of construction going on. It really only started to trickle up in 97, 98, 99. I see the same scenario from a lot supply playing out this time around as last time.
There's a thought that since they're not creating subdivision, it must be because they just are sitting on lots of finished building lots. True or false?
No, totally false.
Okay.
Totally false. I mean, if they had finished lots that they could build on, they would be building on them like crazy. Why wouldn't they have been the last year? They could have made a lot of money selling homes there.
I was baffled, but I don't get this no subdivision creation.
No, there's a data company that calculates the number of finished lots, and it's like at an all-time low right now.
Okay.
Now, mind you, at the national level, that might be true, but at the national level, you're not seeing that kind of huge numbers. I mean, there's been a softening in new single-family home sales over the course of the summer. hasn't really bounced back at all. There's growing inventories. And the inventories of existing single-family homes national level up 50% over the course of the last 8 months or so. So at least at the national level, you're not seeing that same sort of trend.
Say that one more time, up 50%.
So they have the census has an estimate of the number of single-family homes for sale, just basically inventory, and it's up about 50% over the course of the last year or so. So, I mean...
From 2 to 3 or from 3,000 to...
No, I mean, it's still... For month supply, it's still relatively low, but we're talking about 120,000 to about 180,000.
Okay.
Nationally.
Okay.
But it's rising. And, you know, I think that... I really think that the new home market is being stymied in large part by the lack of credit. I mean, you're really dealing with a situation where you know, Fannie used to be showed the numbers. What they're looking for in terms of a Fannie Freddie loan, 750 now, used to be 710. That knocks out 15% of the buying public.
John, who's the buyer of a new home? Is it a move-up buyer or is it a new buyer?
It's somebody who got their last mortgage 15 years ago. They're moving up or they're moving down. It is heavily, heavily skewed to that group. And the Leslie's data showed it really well. The entry-level buyer has been really been missing in this recovery, and it's stunning to me.
But the entry-level buyer then can't even buy the builder's home. And why would a builder build a small home if he can build a big home?
Well, the math is such that if you have to pay a silly price for land, you have to build a big home.
Exactly.
So because of the demand-supply dynamic in the land market, it's forcing them to build bigger homes than probably they would choose to.
When you say builders have confidence, and that's what I heard, they get that feedback from somebody that they trust.
Well, you know, the public builders look at the stock price every day, and when the stocks are way up, they go, people love me, and they want me to grow. My shareholders are buying more, and they want me to grow my business. But the stocks rallied a lot this year and have given almost all of it back at this point. So that video you were referring to is in June. It would be a little bit of a different tone if we had that video today.
I was kind of wondering, you would think the lessons would really have been learned, but usually we start drinking the same Kool-Aid every time it gets good.
Well, the lesson for them is to manage your balance sheet right, and they have. I mean, they've got very little debt due in the next 3 or 4 years. So for the first time in their careers, they've got long-term capital at a really low interest rate to play with, and that's what they're doing.
Okay. Kind of on a different subject, but I know this audience, and some of us are actually concerned that we have debt levels that are not so good. So, Christopher, I'm going to go through a list of these, then we'll backtrack and talk a little bit. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10, you're really scared, okay? Level of concern of the total national debt?
3.
Okay. Level of concern on California's debt?
3.
Okay.
No, we're talking about finance debt. We're talking about outstanding.
Yeah, like $17 trillion for the... Right.
What?
For the national debt. You got seven...
Well, it's not $17 trillion. It's $12 trillion. You got a lot of that sitting in the government's own hands.
Okay.
Net... outstanding debt significantly.
So they lent it to themselves?
They lent it to themselves?
Yeah. Well, the Social Security Administration has been buying debt to pay off future obligations. They have some modest degree of basic accounting skills. And they have bought a lot of the debt.
So I have to trust that they're... Okay. Student debt?
3.
Okay. National deficit as far as annual?
3.
3. I knew this would happen.
He's running for office, I think.
All right. Let's see if we can get a 4 or more. What about the shortfall in retirement accounts? The shortfall in retirement accounts?
Oh, you mean the people who don't have savings?
No, people that have defined benefit plans that think they're going to get paid in full, where if you start looking at...
Oh, I put that at like an 8.5. Yeah, now you're talking.
We finally hit one.
You're talking about Social Security and things like that.
Well, everywhere. No, that's the next one.
Pensions?
Yeah, public pensions.
Okay, public pensions. You got to be a little clear.
I'm sorry.
You're throwing gobbledygook at me.
Okay.
The name, will you? Yeah, 8.5.
And what about...
Oddly enough, public pensions are bad. But California actually is one of the bad states. Look at Illinois.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas has a worse pension problem than we do, underfunded pension problem. Seriously, it's a Moody's Assist report. It's pretty. Now, don't get me wrong. I just means I'm a 6.5 in California, and it's an 8.5 for the nation overall. But it's a huge problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
there's court cases right now about some of the some of the cities have declared bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And normally what happens is that that kind of debt is considered senior debt. And that's probably going to get challenged. I don't know if it's going to change, but...
Well, no, it's already being challenged. I mean, what you're talking about, of course, is the fact that when you think about... It's not even senior debt. According to the Michigan Constitution and the California Constitution, these local state and local public public pensions are supposed to be sacrosanct. You can't touch them. So you declare bankruptcy, the city is still on the hook for that. That is being challenged and will almost certainly be overthrown because, remember, when the city goes bankrupt, it ends up in federal court. It's a federal bankruptcy court. And federal law trumps state law, and if the bankruptcy judge says you're on the hook, you're on the hook. It's as simple as that. And CalPERS has already made the statement that if they indeed lose this particular legal issue, they will indeed garnish those pension payments for the people who are in the San Bernardino system.
Through what entity? Garnish who?
The people who are receiving, the people who had the defined benefit, the retirees in the system today will lose a portion of their payments.
Okay. Now, that's a serious problem because who made that promise? I guess that's what I'm getting down to. If you said that about Social Security, we'd all have a problem with that because there was a promise made. But that, in a way,
hang on. Social Security is not going to be there for everybody either. That's not going to last either. That's another 8.5.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, I think that's 6.5. Medicare is a 9.5.
Okay. Short term, you feel much better than long term. Then,
yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the problem. You know, you listen to the screaming debates going on in D.C., and it really has to do. You know, we have these gerrymandered districts, complete collapse in any kind of controls of campaign finance laws, and we end up with two groups of zealots: one on the left, one on the right. One's making a huge amount of noise about something that's not important, and the other one's completely ignoring things that are important. And gee, I wonder why nothing's getting done.
John, are we going to California's got gradually improving unemployment, are we going to fix unemployment without the participation of the builder? Or are we just going to stay unusually high?
I mean, the builder's doing their damnedest. The other complaint I hear, besides finished lots, is lack of labor.
Okay.
Which you go, what? But people don't want to come back to the industry.
It's been a hiatus for a long time.
And they found jobs elsewhere, and it's not as hard of work, and... labor rates also fell 30% or more during the downturn, so the rates are going to have to come back up to attract people back, and I think that'll happen. But the skilled labor is gone.
Okay. Well, what percentage of California usually is new homes versus existing? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I do have one good stat. In the last 12 months, we've built as many homes in Houston as we've built in the entire state of California. So that'll since single family homes, that'll tell you what it's like to try and get home construction done in California. Because believe me, they're trying just as hard here as they are in Texas. Government's getting in the way.
Okay, does California have a lot more restrictions in the way than a Texas would?
It costs your permits in Carlsbad cost more than the construction cost in San Antonio.
Wouldn't there be a good idea for them to lower those?
Oh, they're raising them.
They're raising them.
Because of all the deficit stuff.
Okay.
Well, no. It has to do with Prop 13.
Oh, here we go. We'll get back to that one, okay? We don't have time to deal with that one. We'll talk about that when we get everybody up here. One of the things that I really wanted to know is, okay, as a person that provides product, this group buys and sells homes. And usually the new home is a competitor that has a fair amount of volume. I don't see the new lot creation to making that a factor.
Yeah. There's no risk to you in competing with a lot of new home supply for the next 3 years. None.
Is it possible that if we had price aggression that mimicked 2013 that the builders would completely miss the subside in California because they didn't have product ready?
I think there's a case for that. I mean, they kind of looked back at 2013 and saying, holy mackerel, I was expecting that kind of appreciation over the next 4 to 5 years, and we had it in 12 months.
Right.
And now I'm having to pay near peak prices for land. You've got to be kidding me. I mean, they're looking at actually the future of their business right now is very risky because of the cost of entry, which is land, is insanely high.
Why didn't they buy with both hands in 2008 or 9, were they unable?
They called every single bank in California 1,000 times. And there was actually surprising to me, a lot of the landowners took the land back, kept the deposit, and had no urgency to sell, and said, you know what, I'm just not selling during the downturn. I'm not selling to you at the price you want, and they held on to it, which was, and they were wise to be holding on to it, but it held construction back.
Okay. Christopher, last question in this segment. Are you concerned about inflation?
No. Look, and this goes back to the whole quantitative easing issue. You got to keep something in mind. 85% of all cash pumped into the economy through quantitative easing is not in the economy. It's sitting in the banks, form of excess reserves. As for bank lending, it has not accelerated. It has actually decelerated, and right now it's about, maybe upper 1% over the course of the last year because the banks aren't lending, again, because of some of the regulatory uncertainty. So the money's sitting there. It's completely neutered, and inflation is a 0% chance anytime in the next 2 years.
Okay. John, last question for you, Ryan, in this segment. The builders that are building, are they surprised by the product that their customer wants? Has that come up where the customer said, you know what, you were thinking you were going to build this, but we'd really prefer this?
I don't think they'd say they're surprised. They're building different homes.
Okay. During
the downturn, they built a box with a roof on top, because they were trying to compete with the foreclosures.
Okay.
Right now, the consumer has said, when you buy something new, you expect the latest, greatest technology, so they want extreme energy efficiency. They want great rooms. It's a different type of design, but they're willing to leave the dining room out altogether to get a price per square foot that works for them. So they're building some new product, which I think is a competitive advantage, if you will.
Okay. Yeah, it's different. Who is the senior group that is retiring? And it's basically our generation. Are they really wanting to downsize? We've sort of been spoiled the whole time, so I just wondered
it's not necessarily a smaller home. It's a lower maintenance home.
Okay.
And it's a different home. I mean, when you've got little kids, you want to be upstairs near the kids. When you've got teenagers, we want them on the other side of the house. And when you get older, you want a master bedroom downstairs. And so that's that. They're kind of picking a different product that's lower maintenance. And some of the homes are actually that they're buying are pretty good size because they want the kids and the grandkids to come back.
Okay. What about demographics? And I'll ask both of you this question. Demographics inside of the next 10 years, is it a different story in the second 10 years when real estate really is, the baby boom generation is really tossing out a lot more homes than can be absorbed? Is there a difference in those two decades, I guess?
I don't think so. Not that much. I think you're going to find as time goes on, those boomers are going to be reluctant to leave.
Well, they're not going, we don't want to leave, but that's kind of what happens.
But
20 years from now, most of us are going to leave.
Because whatever. You're missing my point. I'm sorry.
30, okay?
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Claudia Buys Houses, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, Phoebe, for investors by investors, Homevestors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Inc., John Merrill Investments Inc., Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Associates, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club Phoebe, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Primary Residential Mortgage, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, REIExpo.com, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Tony Alvarez, The Bottom Feeders, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, and Westin South Coast Plaza. See isurvivedrealestate.com for video of the live event and more on our sponsors.